If you're a regular theatergoer in Cincinnati, you've probably enjoyed Paul Short's work, whether you know it or not. He is certainly Cincinnati's most prolific scenic designer of the past 30 or so years, having created more than 40 shows for the Cincinnati Playhouse, including memorable productions of The Foreigner, Sleuth, Dracula, The Wizard of Oz, and Of Mice and Men. He co-founded the Theater Design and Production Program at UC's College Conservatory of Music, where he designed 150 operas, musicals, and dramas. If you go to Patricia Corbett Theater there, you will still see many of his design models on display. Paul is retired, but still works quite regularly and frequently, and his most recent creativity is on stage at the Cincinnati Playhouse this week, starting with a production of Double Indemnity. It opens on Thursday evening. Good to see you again, Paul.
Nice to see you, Rick.
If listeners are fans of film noir thrillers from the 1940s, they certainly know Double Indemnity, which earned 7 Academy Award nominations in 1944, and starred Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray and Edward G. Robinson in the story of a perfect crime that isn't quite so perfect. But I wonder, just to start with, did you know this film when you were recruited to design the set?
I didn't know the film. I'd heard the title, and I certainly went to see the film or check the film out of the library very quickly to see what was up. But I also checked out the original short novel by George M. Kane that preceded the film by about 7 or 8 years.
And what was it that intrigued you then? Because I presume you're at a point in life where if something doesn't really interest you, you don't have to do it any longer.
Oh, I thought the script was impossible to do.
Okay.
Therefore, it was a challenge.
Uh-huh.
And I was paired with Michael Haney, a director I've collaborated with for a long time at the Playhouse. And there was the Playhouse and the St. Louis Repertory Theater asking me to do it. Those were 5 reasons to want to do this play very badly. And I don't want to do it badly. I wanted to do it enthusiastically.
And I'm sure you did, as you do with almost all your projects, as I understand. I also understand that this adaptation is really not an attempt to recreate Billy Wilder's film, that the adapters, 2 fellows named David Pichette and R. Hamilton Wright, went back to Kane's original novel of murder and intrigue, which was the source of the film, but they really worked from the novel itself to write their script for this.
Yes. Frankly, I think that what the audiences will see on stage, they will enjoy more than the movie. Although so many people remember the movie, I'm surprised by how many seem to recall it and like it or loved it. But there's much more to the story in the original novella, and that was one of the huge problems because there were so many changes of locale. And it's perfect for movie making, but there was a big problem with the censorship board back in the 30s that this was too controversial a piece where 2 people planned to do bad against a perfectly faithful husband.
I understand that Kate Smith, the singer in the 1940s, had a campaign to tell people not to go to the movie because it was immoral. Imagine that. I don't know what she'd do with things today. Did you go back and read the novel also?
I did. And read, of course, the script by the 2 adapters in Seattle, who, by the way, are of our generation, and they are actors. I don't know if they've written many other pieces or adapted many other pieces, but by being actors, they were very interested and taken by the characterization and the plot and the tension and so on. But also being actors, they're on the other side of the stage set. So how it works backstage, I think, is a mystery to them. And that was part of the challenge, because we have to go to 29 or 30 different locales to keep the story moving. And the film can do it very easily just with cutting and a soundtrack. It's costly, but it's simple to do. And on the stage, it is very difficult to do, especially at the Playhouse and the St. Louis Rep, where you don't have a real stage house above or behind or to the sides of the set. That was the big challenge of how to do it economically and how to do it dramatically and properly.
I understand you took a couple of runs at it before you finally figured out what was going to work.
Try 4.
4, okay.
More than any piece I've ever done. And I have to say that I was the gloomy person on the team because I kept not succeeding with Michael and the producers of it for my own reasons. Couldn't quite solve it yet. Too expensive, too many crew or whatever. And the hardest thing to do is actually make simplicity that is really the essence of a piece, but gives you everything you need from the piece. It's easy to over-design. You can under-design and make it too simplistic, but to hit it on the money is the real challenge. So I was grumpy for 3 months or 4 months trying to solve this, and then we had a huge breakthrough, and the sun came out, and it's still out.
Can you describe that breakthrough?
Well, it was a combination of things. I have to go back a step and say that what was driving it was after I made a really intense study of several noir films, the lighting of deep shadow, strong contrast, kind of blank walls and shadows of Venetian blinds and corners of buildings and palm trees on walls, the mood is very apparent. So is the music, the underscoring for these types of films. They're all in black and white and shades of gray, and the camera angles are dramatic. This is in the best of them. All that kind of goes beyond the set, but it's part of the mood and atmosphere, a huge part of it. So I had to provide for all of that to happen, and very, very smooth transitions of locale, of sets. But I couldn't do a lot of heavy stuff. It just takes too long. It's like a long, long freight train. And this has to go like a high-speed train through this drama. I don't think I answered your question. I don't even remember your question.
Well, the question was, well, how did you solve it? I mean, what did you do in a way that you can describe for our listeners?
All right. There are two mechanical tricks. All of a sudden, it hit me that if I combine two turntables or Lazy Susans on stage, one left and right, that met in the center, that I could do any combination of turns in any direction and bring in and take away the sets. Well, the sets really are comprised of the most minimal furniture or setting elements, but it went far beyond this because Michael Haney, the director, realized that realistic kind of straightforward plotting theater was not as this piece should be. It's a recollection by the leading figure in the play. It's all in his mind. It's all in the past. So it has to move like memory. So memories are very fluid. They're not that realistic, although they are vivid. So Michael moves the actors in a very, I have to say, poetic sense, not in rhyming sense, but in the sense of essence, of flow, ebb and flow of drama. So he moves his actors. Lighting moves through lighting control. And I happen to be able to move set pieces that move in and out of this shadow as the music is going. So it's really a concert. It's a kind of a dynamic symphony of noir. That's so pretentious sounding, but God, it is. It really is.
What you describe is something that I'm not sure that many people fully understand as to how collaborative it is in creating a production like this. I mean, you have a lighting designer involved, you as the scenic designer, you have the director, you have all the actors, and it all has to come together in a way that gets the kind of result that you want, and has to do it more or less simultaneously once you get the result set up.
That's absolutely true. And in terms of simultaneous, there are things that do happen simultaneous, other things happen sequential, but sometimes you take the lead and sometimes someone else does. So imagine yourself as you are. You have two arms, two hands. Let's say you're right-handed. That's your favorite hand. But in this piece, we had to have several hands, and they all had to be right hands, so that they had to work together. They had to take turns at times. They had to be coordinated as left and right hands. But in this case, everyone is as important as the primary hand. I'm speaking now to you left-handers, if that's your primary hand. You understand.
Yes. Did Michael come to you with a notion of what he wanted this to be like scenically?
We bemoaned the project in the beginning because we felt that the actors hadn't taken into account the stagecraft and how to move their story, other than if it were a radio play. And it would be a fabulous radio play.
By the actors, you mean the adapters.
I'm sorry, the adapters. Right. Yes, who are actors. And I realize I'm disparaging towards them, but I couldn't act, so there you are. So we realized the challenge and the problem of the script, so we went to see an earlier production of it, only the second production of it, in Washington, D.C., which revealed to us a number of weaknesses, some we'd anticipated and some we hadn't. And seeing something concretely brings a lot of things into focus. So we sat down and we talked about what was weak and what was strong, and what we should do. So that is a godsend. That puts us miles ahead to be able to do that. We had a conference about what was important And then we started our work.
If you would like to see the result of that process, you'll be able to do so at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, where this production of Double Indemnity, which is in fact already in previews, opens officially on Thursday. The run continues through May 18th. For more information about the play and the Playhouse, follow the link that you'll find at WVXU.org. My guest has been scenic designer Paul Short, whose work you'll see on stage at the Playhouse for the next month. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Rick.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Pender.